I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, Washington State unions might as well be the mafia because they're using mafia-like tactics. Plus, Washington Attorney General Nick Brown is really feeling himself. And Democrats are trying to scare children senseless over immigration enforcement. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at UndividedPod.com. That's UndividedPod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Man, I really don't think the unions will like me after today's episode, but they don't like me anyway, so it's totally fine. The unions in Washington State, the largest unions specifically, the Washington Education Association, SEIU, a couple examples, they act like mobsters. Absolute mob-like tactics, and that is on full display right now as they work overtime to try to destroy and cripple the last remaining check that people in this state have on the party in power and one-party rule, and that is, of course, the initiative process. So as you know, because of the success of Let's Go Washington in getting initiatives across the finish line in the last few years, they want to stop that success by any means necessary because Democrats control the House, the Senate, the governor's office. They've had a trifecta for most of the last 25 years. So these initiatives are really the only thing standing in the way of complete and total control. And when Democrats have complete and total control, what do? They reward the people who got them there. They reward the unions, the largest donors, and the unions benefit from big government. The unions benefit when taxes are high. And a lot of the Let's Go Washington initiatives have focused around the issue of taxation, and they can't have that. So we need to try to make the initiative process more cumbersome, more difficult, more expensive. So Let's Go Washington and the people who support the Let's Go Washington initiatives can't have a say. So Democrats in Olympia, at the behest of their union friends, are rushing through a bill that's been dubbed the initiative killer. There's two versions of it, one in the House, one in the Senate, but it's the same thing. So it's Senate Bill 5973 and House Bill 2259. And these bills would complicate the initiative process in a few key ways. First, it would require you to go out and collect signatures before you collect signatures. So if you wanted to do an initiative as a citizen, which is your constitutional right in the state of Washington, you'd have to go out and collect 1,000 signatures to show that you have support before they'll even give you an initiative title. And so then you got to go, you do the 1,000 signatures, and then you actually get to start the process. So they're adding another step. The other thing that these initiative killer bills would do is they would prohibit the use of paid signature gatherers on a per signature basis. So you wouldn't be allowed, you'd have to pay someone hourly, essentially. And frankly, if you're paying someone hourly, they really don't have an incentive necessarily to get as many signatures as possible unless they're really, really committed to the issue. But per signature payment has been done in Washington State on initiatives for a long time, initiatives pushed by the left and the right. But now that Let's Go Washington has found it to be a very successful tactic to do a combination of direct-to-mail and paid signature gatherers who are paid per signature, who go out there and grind like hell for a few months because they make a bunch of money doing so, now you have Democrats who are saying, no, we shouldn't allow them to pay someone per signature. So those are the key ways that the initiative killer bills would make the initiative process more difficult. So Democrats, of course, ramming this thing through. The Senate version of this bill, 5973, had a hearing. And who do you think was there testifying in support of it? Watch.
I'm Simone Bowe with the Washington Education Association here in support of Senate Bill 5973.
I'm a SEIU 925 union organizer supporting public service employees across Washington State.
My name is DJ Breimer. I live here in Olympia. I'm a science teacher at Tumwater Middle School, and I'm also the Tumwater Education Association president.
Ah, yes, the unions. They're in person, flesh and blood, to try to destroy democracy, and that's really what they're doing. This is a voter suppression bill. This is making it harder. There's no denying that. This makes it more difficult for Washingtonians to be able to exercise their constitutional right to initiative. And actually, can you play that one more time? Because I swear, one of those MFers looks familiar to me.
I'm Simone Bowe with the Washington Education Association here in support of Senate Bill 5973.
I'm a SEIU 925 union organizer supporting public service employees across Washington State.
My name is DJ Breimer. I live here in Olympia. I'm a science teacher at Tumwater Middle School, and I'm also the Tumwater Education Association president.
Ah, DJ Breimer. I saw that. DJ Breimer. DJ Tumwater. Oh, yes. Gee, he doesn't have a motive to be there at all, to destroy the initiative process at a time when one of the initiatives has to do with keeping boys out of girls' sports. Of course he does, because he's literally obsessed with radical gender ideology. DJ Breimer is the Tumwater school teacher who, right after a 16-year-old girl, Frances Stout, a Tumwater student in his school, came out and spoke out against having to play against a biological boy in basketball, he took to his social media pages to essentially, without using her name, but to condemn her and slander her. That's what kind of guy DJ Breimer is. Grown-ass man who, after a 16-year-old girl comes out and says, hey, I don't want to have to play against boys. 16-year-old girl who goes to the school he teaches at. He comes out on social media to make a statement against what she's doing. So not only does he have a dog in the fight as a member of the Washington Education Association, and we got to stop these initiatives because the WEA has opposed every single initiative Let's Go Washington has ever done. But oh my gosh, the two initiatives, one would keep boys out of girls' sports, the other one would protect parental rights. So a school and a teacher like him can't try to trans a child in the classroom and keep it from the parents. And DJ Breimer, who's literally obsessed with all things LGBTQIA 2 quash plus and quash trust minus, he can't have that. So he's got to attack democracy to stop radical gender ideology from being unwound. Got it. Yeah, he's really someone who's quite trustworthy. And then, of course, they did what I think is predictable and said, we need this initiative killer bill to protect the people of Washington from rich bad people.
The way the initiative system in Washington State is currently set up allows millionaires and billionaires to prey on working people to achieve their own selfish ends.
Washington voters should be confident that if an initiative is on their ballot, they are being asked to consider a change in law that solves a real problem. But right now, anyone with enough money to bankroll their way through the initiative qualifying process can force statewide votes on any issue that's personal to them.
That's kind of what the initiative process is about. Anyone, you don't have to be rich, can have an initiative. Many initiatives that have passed in our state were started by normal people who weren't millionaires and billionaires. But you know what? Millionaires and billionaires also have issues that are important to them too. That's why the initiative process is there. But of course, Brian Haywood, he looks back at him, because Brian's in the room, will play his testimony coming up. Of course, Brian Haywood has, in many instances, used his money to push initiatives that he has no direct benefit from, but that people want, that are common sense. Now, if the only initiative Brian Haywood had ever used Let's Go Washington to push was the initiative to repeal the capital gains tax, then yeah, maybe you'd have an argument that this is a rich guy using his money to hire paid signature gatherers and go out there and get something on the ballot that benefits him personally. But how does him being rich have anything to do with the initiative that he pushed successfully to restore reasonable police pursuits? How does the initiative, he's got college-age kids, they aren't in Washington's public school system. How does the initiative he spent more than $1 million of his own money on to protect girls from having to play against boys, how does that benefit him personally? Like I said, he no longer has kids in Washington's public school system. How does the initiative to restore parental rights benefit him personally? How does the initiative that right now is caught up in the courts because Democrats have lost their minds to give people a choice to use natural gas in their home, how does that benefit him personally just because he's a multimillionaire? It makes no sense. And of course, you have to have around 400,000 people sign one of your initiatives to even get it in front of voters. So you can't just do it on your own. There has to be some support there, unless they're suggesting that people are so stupid that if an initiative is put in front of them, that they'll just sign it. Absolutely crazy. So here's what I think is one of the craziest things said by these union thugs at this meeting. And it had to do with them saying that really the initiative killer bill is about protecting signature gatherers.
A per signature pay structure incentivizes signature gatherers to put themselves in harm's way. At a Fred Meyer in Tacoma, I witnessed this firsthand, where a signature gatherer spent 8 hours visibly ill in freezing weather collecting signatures and misrepresenting the facts of the initiative to people walking in.
Well, isn't that nice? They're concerned about the welfare of signature gatherers. Concerned about the welfare of signature gatherers. Well, did you say a damn thing about any of this?
Were you threatening to shoot me?
I'm not threatening to shoot you.
Oh, okay. You said bop, bop. So was that a threat?
Watch your neck.
So you're threatening me. What did you say to me?
Oh, I said you're still trying to look at kids' genitals.
No, not at all. I'm just collecting signatures to get things on the ballot and make it fair.
This guy is worried about what's in my pants.
Want to help get these on the ballot?
This guy is very concerned about what's in my pants.
Oh, thank you, thank you.
Yeah.
F***ing weirdo.
So if you don't...
What is wrong with you?
I'm calling 911.
Okay, go ahead.
Has SEIU or the WEA said anything about the many, many, many instances in the past year of these signature gatherers they are apparently so concerned about the health and well-being of, being attacked, spit on, harassed, stolen from, threatened with assassination? No, in fact, the WEA and SEIU have contributed to the harassment and assault of signature gatherers, have run snitch hotlines to identify where these signature gatherers they're supposedly so concerned about are at, so they can send out their minions and their thugs to do their dirty work. The WEA has held classes, online classes, to teach people how to go and harass lawful signature gatherers. And you have the audacity to sit there and to suggest that you support this bill to make the initiative process more difficult because it's the right thing to do to protect these signature gatherers. I would also point out that if they really care about the well-being of signature gatherers, there is a bill right now that is specifically about protecting signature gatherers. It was a bill that Republicans tried to get passed last year that even Secretary of State Steve Hobbs supported then and supports now. A bill that would create a barrier for signature gatherers so it would be harder to harass them and threaten them and hurt them. Do you think the WEA is supporting that piece of legislation if they care so much about the well-being of signature gatherers? Of course they're not. They oppose that piece of legislation. So they're totally full of it. Let's see. They also, one of the underlying claims why they say that we can't have paid signature gatherers who are paid per signature is it incentivizes these signature gatherers to just go out there and get fake signatures, get signatures from people who might not even be lawful voters.
Paying by the signature rewards speed and volume and creates pressure to cut corners. These reforms reduce documented issues such as misleading tactics and falsified signatures when compensation is tied to volume.
Interesting. So that's serious. I mean, gosh, if there's some overwhelming evidence, that you've got these signature gatherers, they're paid per signature, so they're just out there writing Mickey Mouse and having people who don't even check our voters, then that's a big deal. So surely they brought with them some evidence of this alleged fraud?
Do you have anything to offer of specific examples, I won't use the word evidence, since 2014, that paid per signatures has resulted in a fraudulent signature as you sit here before today?
I'll take the question and say that currently I don't have it handy. I'll make sure to follow up with the committee on behalf of our testimony. Thank you.
Oh, isn't that convenient? The key point they're trying to make in their testimony, we can't allow signature gatherers to be paid per signature because it leads to, and she even said, Nicole, can you play that again, the union thugs for claiming about fake signatures?
Paying by the signature rewards speed and volume and creates pressure to cut corners. These reforms reduce documented issues such as misleading tactics and falsified signatures when compensation is tied to volume.
Documented issues such as falsified signatures. She says that. She showed up to a committee hearing and told legislators that she supports the bill because it will prevent and it will stop documented instances of falsified signatures. And then again, she can't answer that simple question one more time.
Do you have anything to offer of specific examples? I won't use the word evidence since 2014 that paid per signatures has resulted in a fraudulent signature as you sit here before today?
I'll take the question and say that currently I don't have it handy. I'll make sure to follow up with the committee on behalf of our testimony. Thank you.
Yeah, you don't have it handy because it doesn't exist. You don't have it handy because it doesn't exist. And every single time that initiatives are handed in for a signature, the Secretary of State's office does a sampling to make sure that enough of them are valid. It's not as if there's no protection in place against the idea that someone might submit fraudulent signatures just to get an initiative on the ballot. Like, no one's ever thought of that. Absolutely crazy. The hearing, there were also obviously a lot of people who testified against the initiative killer bill, including the current Democratic Secretary of State, Steve Hobbs, a Democrat, and a past Secretary of State, Sam Reid, a Republican.
Pardon me, Mr. Chair, for saying it, but it's a voter suppression bill. It is an attempt to make it even more difficult for citizens to participate in their government process, to be able to petition to change laws or to refer laws.
The job of the Secretary of State's office is to facilitate the referendum initiative process, and for this reason, I can't support this. This is add another layer of burden, and I get what you're trying to get at. You don't want the title shopping and the number shopping that used to happen. Number shopping doesn't happen anymore. And I saw, when I became Secretary of State, a number of frivolous initiatives that were being filed. In 2020, 346. 2021, 211. 22, 316, and so on. That's why, thanks to Secretary Sam Reid, who introduced a piece of legislation when he was in, allowed for the Secretary of State's office to do rulemaking to increase the fee. I increased the fee from $5, set in 1914, to $156, because that's how much $5 is worth if you extrapolate. I didn't go any more than that. And what happened was a significant drop. I'm proud to announce only 47 initiatives have been filed.
So Steve Hobbs, a Democrat, says the issues you're claiming to fix with this initiative killer bill aren't problems at all. We've already fixed them. This should be a done deal. If the Democrat in charge of our state's elections doesn't support a bill changing the initiative process, this is the guy who has to deal with the initiatives when they come in. It should be DOA. It should be DOA, but it won't be. Why? Because Democrats answer. The Democratic lawmakers answer to the unions. Steve Hobbs was only given the job, and yes, it was given to him, by former Governor Jay Inslee because he was too moderate when he was in the state Senate. Remember this. He was too moderate when he was in the state Senate, and he was blocking some environmental bills that Governor Inslee wanted passed. So when the former Secretary of State, Kim Wyman, left for a job in the Biden administration, Governor Jay Inslee plucked Steve Hobbs out of the Senate to get him out of the way and said, here, be the Secretary of State. And that was great for Steve Hobbs, but there was a motivation behind it. And Steve Hobbs got reelected all on his own merit, and that's great. And I think he's been good on the initiative issue. As a Democrat, he has pushed back against what this clearly is and what Sam Reid said it is, a voter suppression bill. So Steve Hobbs is already not a friend of the unions. The unions already don't like Steve Hobbs, because he wasn't far left enough for them. But the Democrats in Olympia belong to the unions, and they will do what the unions want them to do, even if the Secretary of State of their own political party is saying, don't pass this. It's going to be a disaster, and it doesn't even fix anything. It's totally wild. Brian Haywood was there, of course, with Let's Go Washington, and I got to play the entirety of his testimony. He was being rushed along, which I thought was interesting. But he laid out the exact reason why I'm saying that these unions act like the mafia. So here's his testimony in full.
Imagine any state, blue or red, that has complete and total control of all levers of the entire government, the legislative, the judicial, the executive branch, as well as the watchdog functions. And with that control, they then feel threatened. And we've heard already that this has been challenged in Florida, Arizona, Montana, states that are red, where the red is feeling threatened by the initiative process. And here we are in Washington State, where the one-party control is feeling threatened by this process. And so, therefore, what we've seen is an attempt over the last years to, one, assign controversial ballot titles that are designed to mislead or confuse. there's been a turning of a blind eye to violent attacks against signature gatherers in contravention to Washington election law, passing laws that require an unrebutted statement, propaganda statement, on the ballot itself, using taxpayer funds. Oh, you've turned my time even shorter. Encouraging the Supreme Court to report, to repeatedly rule popular initiatives unconstitutional. Voting on initiative in session, and then immediately the next year, voting to gut it. Now, if that didn't work, then you got to do something else. And that's exactly what this bill would try to do. How do we destroy the initiative process? Well, I would claim to be protecting integrity without any evidence of fraud. Paid signature gatherers, we have no incentive to pay for invalid signatures because it's wasted money. I would claim that the citizen initiative is too taxing, takes up too much time. I would ban paying signature gatherers by signature, even though that's been done
initiatives. If you could wrap up.
I'm wrapping. I've got one more point, sir.
Sure.
So I would ban paying for by signature, even though that's been done for abortion, marijuana, and gay marriage. Then I would finally encourage citizen lawsuits that would invite harassment through lawfare, chilling participation, and creating legal fear in the process. This should be voted no.
And any rational person should see what's happening here. That all of this stuff that they were doing with initiatives was okay when it was divided government. There were a few years there where Republicans controlled one chamber and Democrats couldn't just get through anything they wanted. And so what did they do? They turned to the initiative process. Good for them. And they got voters to pass things that they cared a lot about. And they did it with the tools that they now want to keep Brian Haywood, Let's Go Washington, conservatives and moderates from using to push back against the Democratic majority. Like the mafia. Mafia-like tactics. The only thing they haven't done yet is start killing people. And honestly, I wouldn't put that past them at this point. The other big lie and narrative that these union thugs told as they were up there supporting this bill is that, hey, you know, we just want to make sure that initiatives are actually in the public interest.
We believe this ensures initiatives reflect genuine public interest.
Requiring a modest threshold of valid signatures before a title is issued helps ensure real public interest.
Real public interest. Okay. Let's talk about real public interest. Of all the people that signed in pro and con at this hearing for Senate Bill 5973, let's hear on public interest how many support the initiative killer bill versus how many oppose it.
We have 1,173 pro, 10,520 con.
Huh, interesting. So you care about public interest, right? Well, public interest is against this bill. The public doesn't want this bill by a factor of 10 to 1. So if you really care about public interest, you'd let it go. But it's not about public interest. It's about what's in your interest at the unions. How you can line your pockets, how you can help grow the size of government, keep that tax money coming in so the WEA can continue to make sure that education doesn't get any better, but salaries get a whole hell of a lot better for its members, that we have school superintendents that are paid more than the president of the United States. Give me a break. Public interest, my ass. On this note, however, I want to announce a rally that's going to be happening in Olympia that we will be part of with Let's Go Washington on Tuesday, February 3rd at 2:30 p.m. I know it's the middle of the day on a weekday, but this is a damn good reason to take the day off. I will be down there. We know that there are going to be parents, athletes who are down there to urge the legislature to hold hearings. Just throw us a freaking bone. Hold hearings on the two initiatives. We already know these initiatives are going to go to voters. We already heard from leading Democrats that they're not interested in voting on them at all because they don't want their sick, sad opinion on boys and girls sports to be on the record. But that doesn't mean that you can't hold hearings. That doesn't mean that you can't bring people in and we can hash out some of the lies that are being told about these initiatives publicly. So we're going to be down there Tuesday, February 3rd, 2:30 p.m. We need every single one of you there to make sure that lawmakers hear our anger and our outrage on this issue. All right, Attorney General Nick Brown, he is really feeling himself. He is, and why wouldn't you? He just had yesterday on the one-year anniversary of his swearing in a glowing profile in the Seattle Times. Talked about it on the show yesterday. AG Nick Brown, a year on the job, taking the fight to Trump. I mean, only in like communist China and North Korea would you see, and Seattle, the Seattle Times, would you see an article like this? Oh my God, it made me want to puke, and all these pictures. I mean, they had to spend days with this guy, following him around, taking pictures of him at the farmer's market with his son, and marching in front of the Capitol, and, you know, with his, all smiling and laughing. These aren't even all the pictures. There was like a dozen of them. Just one of the craziest. I mean, really think about that. That was a piece of journalism in the Seattle Times, the same outlet that is trying to keep me from getting access to politicians in Olympia. Well, they write articles like that. Nothing bad about, nothing negative about it all whatsoever. Just he's taking the fight to Trump. Good gracious. But he's feeling himself. So he decided to come out and have a press conference, I think for really no reason. Probably other than just to tout his record. And of course, reinforce his belief that he has to spend every waking hour fighting Trump because Trump is, after all, a fascist.
Last spring, when we talked about the emerging threats from the Trump administration, I started to call what we are seeing from the Trump administration as elements of fascism. Even then, I could not conceive of how lawless this president would be acting, both here domestically and abroad. These un-American actions do not represent the nation well, and America should demand better of their president.
And he's the savior. He is the guy who single-handedly, lawsuit by lawsuit, is going to save America from a fascist regime.
In this Washington, it is important that we set an example of a government that works for the people. And sometimes that means pushing back to defend our state. That's why just over a year into office, we have filed 52 lawsuits in 52 weeks against the federal government's overreach, lawlessness, and refusal to live by its obligation to serve the people.
Now, I think that's embarrassing. I think 52 lawsuits in 52 weeks, while he has so many pressing issues facing the state of Washington, is embarrassing, but he's so proud of it. And he says not only is it about fighting fascists, but of course it's also about fighting racists.
We're also dealing with an administration and people leading his immigration efforts that operate with a level of vitriol, and I think in particular when it comes to people like Stephen Miller, a level of racism that is abhorrent. And the fact that the president has surrounded himself with a team of people who think of people that do not look like them as others, who attack people who have come to this country without basis, and then threaten states that try to provide rights for them is really, I think, a real undercutting of what it means to be an American. But my job is to defend our law.
Yeah. And of course, he also called reporters racist for going to knock on the doors of taxpayer-funded Somali daycares to see if there was any fraud there. And then it turns out that even the state auditor said DCYF made it nearly impossible to audit $415 million in federal dollars that the state of Washington doled out to some of those child care facilities. But yeah, we're racist for looking into it. So he uses the phrase racist quite a bit. But he says, you know what? He's a patriot, so you shouldn't question his motives at all.
I consider myself definitely a patriot and someone that wants to see America and its government work for good. When you see the president attack people on a regular basis, when you see the president go after people that he disagrees with, that is not what we should aspire to as a country. And we're also dealing in an environment where the Congress has totally abandoned their responsibility to provide any check on the president. Unless you're a retiring congressperson, you do not challenge the president if you're a Republican. We've also seen a Supreme Court that has given the president more and more authority to do as he pleases. These are all things that I think should make all Americans scary. And, you know, there are elements of the militarization across the United States, the attacks on journalists and journalism, the freedom of the press, really the attacks on people who disagree with you. These are all things that are, I think, strike at the core of what it means to be an American.
Weird. So it's not American to attack people you disagree with, but he can call Stephen Miller a racist and Trump a fascist. And it's not American to attack the press when just a few days ago he was calling the press racist for looking into potential childcare fraud. Got it. Rules for thee, but not for me. Now, thankfully, there were one or two actual journalists in the room who are not dissuaded by his attacks on them as being racist. So our friend Carlene Johnson with the Center Square, I was very glad she got this question in. We're going to actually discuss it coming up next with Senator John Braun, the Senate Minority Leader. But you'll recall the whistleblower report that we aired at the end of October that looked into self-dealing within Washington's community reinvestment program, which has to do, it's basically a reparations program. They had $250 million doled out to BIPOC nonprofits. Many of them then used that money to enrich themselves, to buy them their family members' houses, to pay off personal credit card debt. We know after our report aired that the Attorney General's office, to their credit, and the Department of Commerce started a joint investigation. Carlene Johnson asked where that's at.
With the Center Square, we've done quite a bit of reporting on it and consulted with the whistleblower, who I understand you have an investigator working with, but she's not getting cooperation back as far as finding out where that investigation stands. Can you provide any update there?
Well, like most of our ongoing investigations, unfortunately not. What I will say is that we have a very robust division within our Consumer Protection Division that looks at allegations of abuse or fraud by charities that operate here in Washington State. And prosecutes those cases civilly when there's abuse of charitable funds. But I cannot comment on that investigation or any other potentially open investigation. When we conclude, if there's something to report or if there's civil charges to be brought, that'll obviously be very transparent. But to protect the investigation, we don't comment on it.
Yeah, and that's totally fair. You've got an ongoing investigation, which I appreciate, which I hope is being done honestly and earnestly to get to the truth on that. So ongoing investigation, I have no issue with that. There isn't any sort of ongoing investigation in the Attorney General's office, however, into potential abuse of child care funds, despite the fact that the state auditor says for 4 years in a row, the Department of Children, Youth, and Families has made it, quote, impossible to audit, end quote, where $415 million in federal tax money has gone. Because DCYF wasn't keeping payment level data to be able to properly track those funds. But Nick Brown, of course, a Democrat, and this issue is being raised by Republicans, keeps downplaying the potential that fraud could even exist. He was asked by Como's Chris Daniels, who's also been fantastic on bird dogging this, a lot of credit to him, about the state GOP, in combination with our friend Jonathan Cho, suing the state for deleting information on child care providers from state websites.
It's, you know, from my vantage point, a pretty baseless lawsuit, but we will respond to it through our court process. But it, you know, it's unfortunate that we have sort of political debates like that through lawsuits like that. But, you know, this is what we get from the chair of the state Republican Party.
Interesting. But wait a second. I thought you just said you couldn't, like, comment on something ongoing and they're suing and you're the state's lawyer, but you can comment on that and take a shot at Jim Walsh. And look, if they were getting anywhere with trying to figure out why, and it's not in debate, he calls it baseless, but there's screenshots of the before and after when people started asking about childcare fraud that same day. Information that identified childcare providers in the state was disappearing from the state website. It's not in dispute. Why was it disappearing? Reporters went down to Olympia, Carlene Johnson, Chris Daniels, Jonathan Cho. They asked elected leaders in the state of Washington about it, and they basically blew off the questions, reiterated it's racist to look into it, it's racist to knock on doors, and all of these things. So yeah, if you're not going to answer questions about why is the information gone, because the information is gone, why was it removed? Then what other recourse do you have than to sue to try to find out? Than to sue to try to get the information you're looking for if you won't give it to us? And he also, and he was asked more about this allegations of potential child care fraud, and it's fascinating to me, the willingness to keep downplaying it. When the auditor, a Democrat, says it's impossible to audit because they didn't do what they were supposed to do. So at the very base level, that's a big problem, right? It's kind of a precursor for fraud. You don't track where the money is going. Well, hell, if they know that the money isn't being tracked, then yeah, there's probably some fraud there. I said it before, I'll say it again. The more an elected leader protests and pushes back against a narrative, the more you should believe that there is something to that narrative. We're going to continue on the conversation with fraud, and at least Republicans are introducing some bills to try to actually address the issue and prevent fraud from happening down the road. Hopefully it'll get some bipartisan support. We'll discuss. First, I have encouraged you guys for years now to take the First Mark Challenge, firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. Connie says, I am so impressed with First Mark. I learned about them through watching Brandy. That's me. And I was looking for a different car insurance company, so I made the call. I received an email from Chase. He was able to save me a considerable amount on my car insurance. He was very easy to work with. No high pressure sales ever. I would recommend First Mark to my friends and family. In fact, I already have. And that's why we call it a family. Are you a member of the First Mark family? I am. Undivided is. Nicole is. There's a reason for that. Yes, they're a sponsor on our show, but that's because they're such a fantastic company to work with. And we always hear from Undivided viewers and listeners that they are treated like family. And that's what we expect from all of our advertisers, that they will treat you guys like family. And First Mark definitely delivers. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance companies. They always have your best interest in mind. All right. I'm happy to see some movement in various places on our whistleblower report, which, again, you know, I think is probably one of the most significant revelations about BIPOC organizations in the state of Washington, who just over the last like 7 years started getting this flood of money. You know, some of it came in during the 2020 riots. I mean, literally, Seattle was handing out millions in sort of money just to get people to shut, to go away and stop storming buildings. They're like, here, take money, take all this. And then they never accounted for any of it. So there's all these issues. And then the talk of reparations sort of bubbled up. And Washington State has a reparations program called the Covenant Homeownership Program. We haven't even started to look into accusations of wrongdoing there. But we did look into, thanks to a whistleblower, accusations of self-dealing within the Community Reinvestment Program. You're probably familiar with the story by now. Money that was supposed to go into the hands of BIPOC community members who were impacted by the war on drugs to help them with home down payments, personal credit card debt, to help them start a business, et cetera, et cetera. Basically, to get them on better financial footing for the future. Now, I think the program is racist and stupid that you would give $250 million toward people because of their skin pigmentation, as if no white people were hurt by the war on drugs, or as if people should be rewarded for having done drugs and gone to prison for it. Just really doesn't make any sense. But the program, the way it was administered, went to BIPOC organizations. And, you know, examples of this, like the Seattle Metropolitan, why can I never think of the name of this? Urban League of Metropolitan Seattle. They used this money in some instances to buy their family members' homes, like hundreds of thousands of dollars towards down payments to buy homes. They used it to pay off personal credit card debts. There was a lot of self-dealing going on. So Senator John Braun, the Senate Minority Leader, has introduced a bill, Senate Bill 6205, that would help prevent some of that in the future. And this is just a totally common sense bill. We talked a little bit about it yesterday. It would say that if you're, you know, dealing within these funds, you got a contract from the state of Washington to deal with these funds, then you can't use the funds on yourself. You can't benefit, and your family can't benefit in any sort of roundabout way from the funds that you've been entrusted to get out to community members. And then it also has some information in there about audits that need to happen every other year. Again, now this should be non-controversial. I said on the show yesterday that this will tell us whether Democrats actually care about investigating fraud. So John Braun was nice enough to join us on the show to not only talk about this bill and this effort, but also to talk about what the hell is going on with these child care audits and why can't the state auditor get the information they need to properly look into it. Senator John Braun, welcome back to Undivided.
Well, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, a lot going on for a short session. Fraud obviously is an issue that I know your caucus is taking seriously. Tell me about Senate Bill 6205. Is this a result of the whistleblower report we did?
It absolutely is a result of the work that you did with the whistleblower, highlighting the double dealing that was happening across many nonprofits that were, you know, broadly tasked with helping folks, you know, especially focused on certain ethnic minorities, get into housing, and where, as you revealed, they were dealing, frankly, self-dealing with related parties, and then telling the other folks that, sorry, we don't have any more money left, you'll have to try again later. Very discouraging, disappointing, certainly morally corrupt, quite possibly legally corrupt, and this bill simply says we got to do a better job of auditing and monitoring these programs to make sure this sort of thing doesn't happen in the future.
Yeah, and then it says, it adds this language, an officer or family member of an officer of an organization under this subsection must not directly or indirectly have a beneficial interest in or receive any compensation, et cetera, et cetera. I guess I'm surprised, is that not already the law? That if you control a state contract and money, that you can't use it on yourself?
You would think so, but apparently not in this case. It should be self-evident, you would think, but we are reinforcing the fact. I think if you dig hard enough, you'd find some tangential law that would make it at least appear illegal, but the claims are, nope, we're within the bounds of the law, so we think we should change the law to make sure they're clearly not within the bounds of the law when they are offering these grants, particularly when they're, you know, multiple grants for the same person for the same house where, you know, they're paying virtually nothing for the house while the next person in line gets an IOU. Someday we'll help you, but not today.
Yeah, I know, and I've been told that there is a joint investigation into what was happening with the community reinvestment funds between Commerce and the Attorney General's office. Are you aware of any sort of official actions into any of this on those two fronts?
I am not. I heard the same thing you're probably referring to early when this was first exposed to both the then Secretary of Commerce, Joe Wynn, and the Attorney General said these ought to be investigated. After that, it's been the kind of the same old, you know, talk to the hand. We can't talk to you while we are doing an investigation. Some of that is legitimate, perhaps. It could also just be a screen for, we're not going to do anything, but we're not going to tell you and hope you forget eventually.
Well, as part of this bill and writing it, and now, you know, hopefully it gets somewhere, have you reached out to any of these nonprofits, or are there any sort of stakeholders who you expect to speak for or against this?
No, actually, we haven't really engaged with the nonprofits who were involved in the double dealing. We didn't think that would necessarily be helpful. What we looked at is we studied the programs as administered by the Department of Commerce, and this isn't a particularly, you know, pointy law. It simply says if we're going to give state money to these nonprofits, let's make sure they behave reasonably with it, and that includes not, you know, dealing in self-interest. I wouldn't characterize this as a partisan bill. This is simply a good government bill. And to her credit, the chair of housing has agreed to hear the bill. So that's positive news from my perspective.
Oh, interesting. Do you have a timeline on when a hearing might happen?
I just saw it just before you started. I can get that information to you, but I don't know. I didn't commit it to memory, so I'll get it to you shortly.
Yeah, and it does. And I said that on the show yesterday. This should be non-controversial. Right. It's basically saying if we give you state money to get out to the community, you can't use it to buy your daughter a house. You can't use it to pay off $50,000 in credit card debt for one of your employees. So, I mean, what would it say to you if Democrats would not support something like this?
Oh, it just says, you know, they're not serious about these programs. This isn't wild, controversial stuff. This is fundamental good government. And if Democrats, back to your question, if Democrats aren't willing to embrace that and say, we got to be accountable for how we spend people's money, then I think they just aren't serious.
Yeah, and to your point, and it's such a good point, I think this is overlooked. And it looks like, we'd have to admit that there was some fraud going on or self-dealing or whatever it is. But when we first put out this report, we were inundated with emails from members of the Black community who met all the qualifications for these programs, but were turned away and told we're out of money, as these organizations were using money for their friends and family. So if they, to your point, really believe that this program is necessary and people need the money, they should want to do everything they can to make sure the money gets out into the hands of the people they intended the money to go to. So it's such a great point. I want to ask you quickly about a related but different issue on the fraud front. There's been a lot of questions, of course, about is something happening here similar to what was happening in Minneapolis with childcare fraud. Reporters have been met by a lot of hostility when asking the majority party. You were there for one of the panel sessions in the lead up to the session. But it's gotten even more hostile since then when reporters just even raised the possibility that there's fraud within the childcare system. Why do you think that hostility exists?
I think they're very sensitive to being told that they got it wrong, which is, I think, entirely wrongheaded. Look, you know, the legislature is a human organization, just like lots of other organizations. The reality is we get things wrong sometimes. That's not the end of the world. What is really bad is when you get it wrong and you're not willing to correct it. And that's what they appear to be right now, is they want to hide from any scrutiny. And it's entirely wrongheaded in my mind. If there really is fraud, we should investigate and there should be consequences. And I don't think anybody disagrees with that. If there's not, you know, not fraud, we should still investigate so that we can share that with the people of the state of Washington. There is deep distrust among people around the state in how the state, you know, how we're using our money. If we're going to bring people back together, if we're going to build trust in state government, we can't ignore this. We can't hide it. We have to dig in and share the facts, whatever they are, with the people of the state of Washington.
Yeah, and this brings me to this latest report from Como News. So to her credit, the state auditor, a Democrat, Pat McCarthy, she came out in an interview with Como, said basically, we don't even have the information to be able to do a proper audit of DCYF. Said for the past four statewide audits, DCYF has not given them provider level data when it comes to payouts of childcare funds. Pat McCarthy called DCYF the most risky of all the departments in state government as it pertains to the potential for fraud. I guess I'm confused. If the state auditor wants data from a state agency, how is it that the state auditor can't just get that data from the state agency?
Great question, and one that really kind of had us baffled at first. It does appear, we've done a fairly deep dive into this, it does appear there is, you know, when we created Department of Children, Youth, and Families, I think back in 2017, buried deep in that creation, statute was some prohibition on sharing data with the auditor. Give it a positive light, perhaps they were worried about privacy. I don't think that's accurate. The auditor audits lots of things where private data is involved, and they have very strict protocols on how they protect it. So it's not valid, but I can see that's why they might have done it. Could be because they just didn't want oversight. Either way, we need to fix this. And my colleague, Senator Ron Mazzal, has introduced a bill to get after this problem. And again, if Democrats are serious about good government, about delivering on their promises to the people of the state of Washington, they should embrace that. Absolutely, the DCYF should be audited. And she's the auditor's entirely right. When you talk about risk to the state long-term in terms of litigation or harm to folks in our care, there's no place in state government where our state is at bigger risk, and more importantly, where people in our care are at bigger risk. Therefore, we should be exceptionally careful.
Yeah, and I will have Senator Mazzal on the show to talk about his bill and what issue it might fix in there. But just again, I quoting from the Democratic state auditor, she told Como, by not complying with federal law requirements to maintain adequate supporting documentation for expenditures, DCYF made it impossible for our office to audit the federal dollars it used for payments to child care providers. And those dollars add up to $415 million. So how is it possible to even do an audit of a state agency like DCYF if you don't have information like that?
I think there's two issues here, Brandy. One is some legal protections that we need to address and make it that data accessible. And then the other is a management issue at DCYF. They need to make sure they're keeping track of how they're spending money. And the taxpayers need to understand that we spend not just hundreds of millions of dollars, but billions of dollars in the Department of Children, Youth, and Families to protect young children. And there is enormous risk, not just for fraud, for misbehavior, for bad things to happen to the folks in our care. We should be, as I said, extraordinarily careful when it comes to how we, and there should be a very high standard when it comes to the Department of Children, Youth, and Families. We have messed this up for too long. We need to admit that we're falling short and get after it. And the very first step is a detailed audit of everything, not just what the agency wants to willingly provide.
Yeah. When you can't audit $415 million in an agency's budget, that you can't audit. That you can't do an audit. That's just crazy. So, all right, Senator Braun, we appreciate it. And thank you so much for the bill following up on the Community Reinvestment Program story. I know it's just common sense, so I'm hoping that it gets the hearing it deserves, it sounds like it is, and that maybe it makes some traction. So thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me on.
So that's news there, that they're going to actually hold a hearing on his bill to prevent further self-dealing within the community reinvestment program. I hope that the chair, a Democrat, means that. And when that happens next week, we'll absolutely cover it on our show. And I know our whistleblower has already expressed interest in testifying at any hearing on this issue. So hopefully she gets an opportunity to do that. We will track it. Coming up next in our segment, Unbelievable, why are Democrats trying to scare little kids about ICE enforcement? It's really sick when you think about it. It is absolutely disgusting. Scare them for no reason whatsoever. We'll discuss first, if you are thinking about selling your home, maybe taking the first thoughts I hear from people every day, I'm moving out of Washington. I don't want you to go. But if you do go, I totally understand. Reach out to our friend Wes Jones of sellwithwes.com to start the process of selling your home. Because, you know, especially if you know that there's going to have to be some upgrades made to your home to get the most possible money out of it, that's a process that you want to get going pretty early on so you're not stressed and in a hurry. Wes can help you out with that. Mark B., that was the case. Him and his family were trying to sell his mom's house. They didn't even live in the area. So Wes was able to step in and take some stress off of them. Mark said, all I can say, it was a very smooth experience, just what I was hoping for. We had to sell my mom's house and it needed a little bit of prep, new carpet, paint, yard work. None of us lived nearby. And Wes, Erica, and the team took care of it all. We got asking price and it sold the first weekend. 5 stars for Wes. Wes is awesome. Start by using their home value calculator to see how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. Sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. Really just is a better way to sell your home. Oh my gosh, Seattle Public Schools in lockdown. No, not over any sort of real threat, over the potential that ICE could have, maybe, possibly, who knows, been in the area. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. Okay, so folks called yesterday's walkouts at public schools. There was calls nationwide for kids to walk out of classes to protest ICE enforcement actions. They called it the Free America walkout. Look, kids in Seattle in particular and Washington State, they'll walk out over anything. Very, very susceptible to suggestion. And I think we did a segment once laughing about all the various things in a single year Seattle public school kids walked out against. Now, I believe that there's a core group that maybe believes in the things they're walking out against. Whatever, kids passionate about stuff. But then I think most of them are like, oh, a chance to walk out of class in mass, totally going to do that. But there were school districts actually encouraging and supporting kids walking out to protest the Trump administration. One of them was Whatcom Middle School. And they alerted families. Dear Whatcom families, we wanted you to be aware that today from about 2 p.m. to 2:10, 67th and 8th grade Whatcom students were involved in a walkout. We understand this student-led action was in response to concerns about freedom in our nation. We support students' freedom of expression and appreciate that they advocated with their peers. Like what? It's important to us that students' voices feel heard and that we encourage them to support and advocate for one another and for causes that they believe in. If you have any questions or concerns, please reach out. Why even say that? Like, fine, tell parents, hey, kids walked out, here's what they were doing. But this tells me that those kids are not going to get in trouble. That tells me kids aren't going to get in trouble. And if they're doing something they believe in, then they ought to be able to deal with the consequences of it. But do you think that they would, like, send out a similar message to this if kids walked out in support of ICE or in support of Trump? No, it's because they only support kids expressing their opinion when it's the prevailing opinion in the state of Washington or in public schools. And that's what's happening here. It's also, I think, a liability issue. If you're saying we support students doing this, well, you're entrusted with the care of kids while they're at school. What if one of these kids walked out and got hit by a bus or hit by a car or kidnapped off the street? So schools shouldn't be supporting children walking out in the middle of the day. It's just strange to me. Now, there were walkouts. I will say, wasn't as widespread in a state like Washington as I thought it would be. This is from the Seattle area. Eastside High School students walk out to protest Trump immigration policies. Demonstrations at Garfield and Roosevelt High were part of nationwide protests tied to the anniversary of President Trump's second inauguration. So kids were out in Seattle and also in Spokane. This from the Spokesman Review. Our youth want change. More than 400 students walk out across Spokane Valley, Liberty Lake schools in protest of ICE. Now, why do you think abolish ICE? Kids are saying, good Lord. Now, why do you think like this is happening? Same reason all these other walkouts happen. Adults have convinced them that these are issues worth walking out about. These aren't like spontaneous youth, seventh and eighth graders, who are saying, oh my gosh, Trump's policies are so bad, abolish ICE. No, it's because they got teachers who are spewing this nonsense in classrooms, and they got the media that's just lapping it all up, and uncritical politicians who are pushing it. This was, so just a coincidence, I'm sure. So the walkout happens, wasn't as big as maybe the teachers' union wanted it to be. So all of a sudden, during this yesterday, there were unconfirmed reports, but reports made that ICE might be in the area of some of these walkouts. So without any sort of confirmation, is this legit, whatever it is, six schools went on lockdown. You guys, Seattle Public Schools put six schools in lockdown, shelter in place, due to reported ICE activity that wasn't even confirmed. It says, unconfirmed community reports of possible U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement activity led several Seattle public schools to shelter in place and keep students inside on Tuesday. At least six schools in and around South Seattle and Beacon Hill were under shelter-in-place protocols at one point, according to the Seattle Public School District. It says it wasn't clear whether ICE officials were actually in the area, and the district didn't provide details about the initial reports that spurred the shelter-in-place decisions. So there's no information about it at all. My guess is that it was some loony lefty who wanted to fan the flames. Kids are walking out, wanted to literally scare kids and families and all of this. And so said, oh, I think I see some ICE agents nearby. They're going to arrest kids or something. That, I guarantee that's what it is. But there doesn't need to be any proof about it or anything for the governor of the state of Washington to weigh in on it. Absent any verified information whatsoever, Governor Bob Ferguson says, this is disturbing. What, sir, is disturbing? What's disturbing? We don't even know what happened. We don't even know if there was actually ICE in the area at all. Could have been police, Seattle police doing a traffic stop. Could have been nothing at all and just somebody making it up. But the governor of the state calls it disturbing? We're monitoring the situation closely. Monitoring what situation? So you've got at least six schools, including, I think, one a middle school, a high school, an elementary school. You've got elementary kids who are having to shelter in place because federal agents might maybe be nearby carrying out lawful immigration enforcement. They want kids to be scared. They want it to seem like President Donald Trump with his Nazi Gestapo are creating an unsafe learning environment for students. And it's really no surprise that this happens because we see these false reports everywhere. We see this happen all the time. I mean, what was the story we did a couple months ago? The King County Councilwoman, Sarah Perry, who put on some community page that ICE was staying at a hotel in Issaquah. And it was like, one, okay, so now unhinged people know where ICE agents are sleeping. But two, it didn't even turn out to be ICE. It was the state patrol bomb squad in town to do some training. So she like doxed state patrol because she had no idea and they don't care. They don't care to get it right. They want people to be scared and feel like ICE is all around them and ICE is everywhere. And they're going after innocent people and Americans and kids and they have no shame. And there was a really recent example of this. So Emily Klaus is a Thurston County Commissioner, District 5. So she posted this video. And the little text you see on it was added later. But just at first, she posted the video. And she was claiming that ICE agents were carrying out some sort of enforcement action. That was the initial thing. Post a video. And that's the only context, claimed it was ICE in the area. And they're like, there's a ton of vehicles, SWAT style, all this stuff. This is an elected leader. You know, she could pick up the phone easily as an elected leader and she could call someone and say, hey, what's going on here? She could call the sheriff and say, what's going on here? She could make one phone call and figure out if it's really ICE or someone else, but she chose not to do it. Instead, she chose to post a video suggesting it was ICE and getting everyone riled up. Well, the Thurston County Sheriff, Derek Sanders, came out and said, that wasn't ICE, that was us. Wasn't ICE, it was us. He said a number of citizens have reached out with questions after seeing video footage of a local operation that occurred today in Lacey that was posted by an elected official with no context. Toward the end of a SWAT operation, Thurston County Commissioner Emily Klaus arrived on scene and recorded deputies and officers from the Thurston County Sheriff's Office, the Lacey Police Department, the Tumwater Police Department, the Olympia Police Department, Yum Police Department, and Lacey Fire Department. The footage that is posted was during the debrief after the suspect was taken into custody peacefully. The incident was not immigration related, nor were there any federal agencies involved. Instead, it was a response to a domestic violence assault with a firearm. So they're trying to save a woman's life. Got all the agencies there, all the local agencies that commissioner helps control in her capacity. And she can't pick up the phone to call anybody. Instead, she says it's ICE. And the sheriff's like, that's not ICE. Didn't stop the Olympian, one of our favorite sources of journalism, from posting a suggestive headline, as opposed to just debunking it entirely. They said, did ICE agents raid a Lacey area home on Monday? Thurston County officials explain. No, you could have said, no, ICE agents did not raid a Lacey area home on Monday. You could have just said, didn't happen, in the headline. No, but you can't. This is the same newspaper, by the way, that published that fictitious report about a guy named Paco who was ripped out of his farm and he didn't do anything wrong and ICE came and ripped him off the fields when he was really a guy named Youssef who was wanted for murder in Mexico. And it wasn't even ICE. It was the U.S. Marshals Service. And we had to send them a cease and desist because in the story that they did following up, they blamed me for the whole thing somehow. Yeah, that's the Olympian. They need to get that click. Click, 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 click. You got to get the click. So they can't just say, no, wasn't ICE, guys. Calm down. And then Emily Klaus posted a non-apology and explained why she took the video down. She said, almost justifying her actions, during a time of increasing violence targeting immigrant communities, one actionable response is to observe and inform each other of what's going on in our communities. I strongly encourage all interested community members to get involved in groups like Washington Immigrant Solidarity Network to learn how to safely advocate for those currently being targeted. This morning, I responded to a community alert about potential ICE activity in Lacey. When I arrived on scene, I was relieved to discover that it was not federal agents. I observed several local law enforcement agencies responding to a domestic violence incident. First of all, that's not what happened at all. You're literally lying about the lie. You're saying that you got there. So this is almost worse. When I arrived, I was relieved to discover it wasn't federal agents. Then why did you post the video suggesting it was? If you're saying you were relieved when you got there to find out it wasn't, why did you? So you're saying you knowingly lied to people? As a reminder, we have a constitutional right to observe and record police activity in public spaces, as long as we don't interfere with their work. In this instance, upon notifying those who reported the activity and confirming the situation, I left the area and chose to delete the video. I've shared additional resources here for continued awareness. God, maybe you, because she went live, I think, right? Maybe that was it. She went live. So you just, as a Thurston County commissioner, somebody alerts you, random person, oh, there's ICE in the area, and you decide to show up and do a live stream of the video having literally no clue what's going on. No clue. Could have absolutely, if this was an active ongoing situation and you had a domestic violence suspect held up with a gun inside and you're live broadcasting what the police are doing outside, could have got him shot, could have got him killed, moron. But oh my gosh, Donald Trump bad, ICE scary. So now everybody who looks like a cop is ICE. And that's why you end up with shelter in place orders at 6 Seattle Public Schools. Because some idiot calls in, sees somebody, looks like probably a security guard for a freaking Target or something, because they have to have security because all our policies lead to things getting stolen. It's probably what it was. It was probably Securitas. Some morons like, ICE is near the school. And they lock it down and scare the hell out of kids. And then kids are scared, so they stage walkouts to protest ICE activity, which you shouldn't be worried about if you're in the country legally and your family is. Not a big deal. And if you're not in the country legally and your family's not, well, yeah, they might scoop you up sometime, but it's not going to be in a school, okay? Not going to be in a school. These people drive me nuts. Ha! Huh. Getting lead, I got heartburn over it. All right, we'll get to some national news coming up next. Elections have consequences. That's the theme. First, are we in a tech bubble? Are we in an AI bubble? Are you like, I don't know, Brandy, I just set it and forget it, which is sometimes fine with your retirement portfolio. You don't want to be obsessed about the ups and downs, but you should have some sort of idea about how well it's being managed for risk. And that's what Zach Abraham and his team specialize in. And Zach is having a New Year Reset live webinar coming up in 8 days on January 29th, 3:30 p.m. Pacific. They usually do about four of these a year, and it's really a good low pressure way to see what Bulwark Capital is all about. You can ask questions if you want. You can just passively participate and just watch. Zach is going to discuss the impact AI could have on the 2026 market, how Bulwark Capital is focused on risk management, and how they incorporate value-based principles in managing retirement portfolios. Plus, they'll do a full reveal of how Bulwark is always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, give your retirement as much upside as possible. So register now for the free New Year Reset live webinar, January 29th. Schedule your free Know Your Risk portfolio review while you're signing up at knowyourriskpodcast.com, knowyourriskpodcast.com. All right, elections have consequences. So, of course, Democrats won the governor's office in Virginia with Abigail Spamberger. And she ran as a moderate. And I guess she kind of had to run as a moderate because Glenn Youngkin had been the governor as a Republican. You know, one, it was a very, I think, unexpected win for him. So when you've got a state that has leaned and gone blue and then you've got a Republican in the governor, of course, the Democrat's going to pretend to be a moderate. But now, very quickly, we're like a couple days in, like days after she's sworn in, and they are finding out very quickly that she's no moderate at all. And now the state of Virginia is going to pay the price for voting her into office. So some of the unhinged things going on, this is one of them. Democrats in Virginia, now that they have a governor who'll sign it, they've introduced a bill to eliminate mandatory minimum sentences for rape, manslaughter, assaulting law enforcement officers, possession and distribution of child porn, and all repeat violent felonies. So yeah, oh, we can't have mandatory minimums. That's mean. And now that we don't have that troublesome Glenn Youngkin in the governor's office, we've got one of us who'll sign something like this. Also, one of her first acts was to say local law enforcement here is not going to cooperate with ICE.
This executive order rescinds executive order number 47. State and local law enforcement should not be required to divert their limited resources to enforce federal civil immigration laws. It is a responsibility of federal law enforcement. Virginia state and local law enforcement officers must be able to focus on their core responsibilities, investigating crime and community policing.
Ah, it's a real moderate right there. No, it's just another loony lefty that's ideologically driven and doesn't care about public safety. And I was going to go list a bunch of others, but then I saw this clip of Bret Baier doing it on Fox News. I don't know how he did this without running out of breath, but he just in the first couple days listed some of the things Democrats are now trying to push through in the state of Virginia because they have a governor who's going to cooperate with their agenda.
Well, that's the new governor of the Commonwealth of Virginia, Abigail Spamberger, ran for that office as a moderate. But the executive order that she talked about is state and local police not cooperating with ICE to get criminal illegal immigrants. There's also a list of now the Democrats control the legislature that a number of bills that have been put forward. You can't read it here, but let me just go through it. Sales tax on Uber Eats, Amazon, sales tax on admissions to a variety of businesses, create two new higher tax brackets, 10% tax bracket for anyone making over $1 million, 3.8 investment tax, raise the hotel tax, new personal property tax on landscaping equipment, ban gas-powered leaf blowers, guarantee illegal aliens free education, make it illegal to approach somebody at an abortion clinic, extend the time absentee ballots can be received after Election Day, allow people to cast their votes electronically through the Internet, expand ranked choice voting, extend the deadline for ballot curing, redact the addresses of political candidates from FOIAs, add Virginia to the National Popular Vote Compact, make it illegal to hand count ballots, $500 sales tax on firearm suppressors, assault weapons and large capacity magazine ban, 11% sales tax on all firearms and ammunition, prohibit outdoor shooting of a firearm less than 5 acres, lower the criminal penalties for robbery, ban the arrest of illegal aliens in courthouses, remove mandatory minimum sentences, allow localities to install speed cameras, and replace Columbus Day with Indigenous Peoples Day.
Wow.
So elections have consequences, Josh.
Yeah, elections have consequences. That's quite the list. And look, I don't blame the party. They had all these priorities they couldn't get through under Glenn Youngkin, so now they're going to push them all, and that'll be the test. I mean, I think we already know in the first couple things that she's done that Abigail Spamberger is a uber progressive. Never was a moderate, but, you know, I think this is across the board. It goes for Republicans, it goes for Democrats. A lot of politicians are good at being exactly who they need to be in order to win. There's a lot of politicians like that right here in Washington State. All right, Trump hobnobbing at the Global Economic Forum. Talking about Greenland, and I've had mixed thoughts on Greenland. I don't hate the idea of acquiring Greenland. It's been tried before. U.S. presidents have tried and recognized, both Democrat and Republican, the strategic value of acquiring Greenland. I'm not an expert in Greenland and the history of trying to acquire Greenland, but in recent days, I've researched it a little bit because I was sort of annoyed with the president's continued obsession with Greenland. And I'm like, maybe I should look into the history of this a little bit more, inform myself. So it's not like this wild thing that Trump, sometimes he does this, he just like comes up with something. He's like, I'm going to do this, and he's obsessed with it. But this doesn't come out of nowhere. It's been something that the United States has wanted to do for a long time. But because it's Trump who wants to do it now, and because maybe he doesn't choose his words very well and kind of seems a little harsh at times, they're like, meltdown. This is horrible. But he's in Davos, and he is talking about Greenland and making his plans on the effort to acquire Greenland a little more clear.
So we want a piece of ice for world protection. And they won't give it. We've never asked for anything else. And we could have kept that piece of land, and we didn't. So they have a choice. You can say yes, and we will be very appreciative. Or you can say no, and we will remember.
It's very threatening, you know? Now, I feel like he's mostly ruled out taking some sort of military action to take it by force. But he's a negotiator, right? And he is trying to negotiate a deal that's fair for everyone. He posted on Truth Social, based upon a very productive meeting that I have had with the Secretary General of NATO, we have formed the framework of a future deal with respect to Greenland and, in fact, the entire Arctic region. This solution, if consummated, will be a great one for the United States of America and all NATO nations. Based upon this understanding, I will not be imposing the tariffs that were scheduled to go into effect on February 1st. He was going to slap tariffs on European countries who were trying to get in the way. Additional discussions are being held concerning the Golden Dome as it pertains to Greenland. Further information will be made available as discussions progress. Vice President J.D. Vance, Secretary of State Marco Rubio, Special Envoy Steve Witkoff, and various others, as needed, will be responsible for the negotiations. They will report directly to me, and as always, thank you for your attention to this matter. So we will see what happens with Greenland. I did ask you guys, because this is a midterm year, and issues like the economy tend to be the most important to voters, how they're actually feeling in their day-to-day lives when they decide whether they want to vote the party in power out of power, and that's historically how it goes. So you really need to sell the case as the president and Republicans. So I wanted to gauge subscribers' feelings on whether his obsession over Greenland right now is reflecting positively or negatively on Republicans. Basically, should this be something that they're focused on in a midterm election year? So positive, negative, or neither? Nicole, what do you say?
I'm going to say neither, actually. I don't really think this has an effect on
you don't think it's going to decide
voters?
I think
there's plenty of things that do, but I don't think this is. I think he's actually trying to use this as a distraction. It could be a win if he gets it, but I don't really think it affects it.
I'm going to say negative only because that's time he could be spending helping with the economy and talking about
the
economy.
The man never sleeps. So I went to bed and Air Force One had turned around and landed, and they were waiting for him to take off again or whatever. That's when I went to bed. By the time I got up, he was speaking to them.
I know. He does never sleep.
Holy crap.
So he can do it all. But I think you're just giving the media things to focus on as opposed to the economy and all this. So I don't know. But 62% of you say negative, that this is having a negative impact on Republicans during the midterms. Let's see. Brian, I believe it's another distraction from the Epstein files. DJT has destroyed the credibility of the GOP from the inside, as I always knew he would. Harsh. Mm-hmm. I hope for a return to normalcy in the future someday. Lynn responded to that. She said, please, someone tell me, what more can Trump do about the Epstein files? He ordered them to be disclosed and shared. They're being done. What else? I don't know. Matt, it's about their pocketbook. Greenland is a distraction. The average American is paying no mind to it. Mm-hmm. Robert, it will be negative, but the underlying issue of Danish neglect of Greenland isn't understood or considered. Do the Danes have any defense forces in Greenland? If they do, what are their capabilities? And no, I do believe there's a valid I don't think that he wants it for no reason, just to acquire something. Like you said, it's a piece of ice. We want a piece of ice for global security. Right. I believe there's absolutely valid, and I'm not going to pretend overnight. I hate when talking heads do this, and every time there's an issue that comes up, they act like an expert. Mm-hmm. I'm an expert on Venezuela 1 week. I'm an expert on international law the next week. I'm an ex, you know, it's like I had to research a little bit about the history of why the United States wants Greenland and all those things. But having done that, I do believe there's a strategic advantage to it. But is it the thing to focus on right now? Sheila, I may be ignorant, but I'm not getting why he's trying to acquire Greenland. I may be missing something. And look, put a larger military presence. I don't think they'd have an issue with that. Put a larger military presence on it. If they'll let you do that, then that will that take care of it? I don't know. Weisscastle, I put his current efforts as negative, but I still think it's a good idea for the U.S. to have a stronger presence in Greenland.
I will say coverage of it is another example of the media being ridiculous, because I think there's a lot of people in Greenland that actually support it, and they're framing it as if it's like, oh my God, nobody wants us there.
Right, and also, if they were taking the time to explain to viewers the history of the U.S. trying to get Greenland.
It's not just for fun.
And the strategic. Right. It's not just like Trump's like, I want it. It's the biggest island on Earth. So, yeah, the media, as always, drives a lot of crazy narratives. We'll get to comments from the live stream coming up next. First, if you are a small to mid-sized landlord in the state of Washington, become a member of the Rental Housing Association of Washington today. RHAWA.org. RHAWA.org. They are Washington's trusted resource empowering housing providers. And they do that by making sure that you are able to navigate this complex world of rules and regulations. You know, rent control is a pretty new thing that's taken Washington State by storm and really created a headache for a lot of housing providers. So they can help you navigate that. Just understand everything that's going on and stay up to date. And then they're your voice down in Olympia this time of year during the session. So become a member today, RHAWA.org, RHAWA.org. Okay, on the fight to save the initiative process from yet another attack, SSR's Garage says they force these bills to be written in such a way so that when they pass, they can claim people didn't understand it. Then they overturn them. Yeah, they've made the initiatives very confusing. It's like you should want it to be as straightforward as possible. Mm-hmm. Like, look, no dudes and girls sports. But they'll write these ballot titles, but you really don't know what you're voting for, and it confuses people.
To hear what people want.
They do not want to hear what people want. They want a blind populace.
Yep, just like give us control, we'll blind. Deal with it, you don't know any better.
Papa Woody, Brian Haywood is the Bruce Wayne of Washington. Yeah, that Bruce Wayne was rich, you know?
That might be my favorite comment.
Yeah, I
make
sure
that. He sees that.
Yeah. The American unions have always been and are run by the mafia. Of course they use mob tactics. It's a very good point. I mean, you know, the mafia controlled the unions. The unions were the mafia. But when I think of the unions of yesteryear, you know, they were like literally murdering people. I don't think that our unions are necessarily doing that anymore. Could be proven wrong because they've gotten pretty unhinged. Let's see. Steve Jones, union thugs is a redundant phrase. Kitty Carlisle, initiatives are the only voice common people have left.
Optouttoday.com.
Optouttoday.com. Optouttoday.com. I feel like I need to make a song out of it. Optouttoday.com.
We'll do it for
them. Leave the union today. Yeah. Something like that. I'll create a better song. I'll have AI do it, okay? On AG Nick Brown's weird press conference bragging about the Trump lawsuits, Terry Witchey, how many lawsuits has he won? You know, I'm not sure the number. There's a lot that are still pending.
Yeah, a lot of them are just put on hold. When he files it, then it holds it up and it delays everything.
On the proposed bill that is trying to prevent fraud in the reparations fund, Spice Chris says politicians should have to be educated in accounting so they understand budget and proper spending to get a proper balance. Instead, they use their political positions to overspend and force the struggling taxpayers to keep paying for their lack of accountability and responsibility. Amen. That is what they do, isn't it? Damoran, getting things wrong is like 0.05% of the time. The corruption is deliberate. So yeah, maybe Senator John Braun being a little too gracious when he says that, hey, we're humans, you know, the legislature gets things wrong. It's one thing to get it wrong. It's one thing to know it's wrong and not fix it. That's
or know it's wrong and go forward anyway, because a lot of these, they were warned. They knew exactly what would happen. They did it anyway.
100%. On trying to scare the hell out of kids over ice, Little Miss J says, we had an ice walkout here locally just yesterday because the fear and propaganda happening. These kids are being radicalized. It's absolutely shameful. I agree. On Virginia learning the hard way, old sub sailor, wow, you get what you vote for, socialist insertion into state government. Let's fit in a couple of super chats, shall we? David Nguyen, you are amazing. Oh, that's nice. That's a nice super chat. Thank
well,
you.
Well, that's sweet.
That's great. Nicole's Cat, sending love and support to all Washington Humies from Florida. Please stay safe. Keep up the great work, Brandy and Mom. That's Nicole. P.S. Brandy, your hair looks great. Thank you. Thank you. Because I said you guys didn't notice I got it blonded or
there's
blonder.
Your notice. Yes. There's your notice. And have fun in Florida.
Appreciate that. Yeah, well,
I don't know
Florida.
Why my cat's in Florida.
I don't know. Did you know your cat was in Florida?
I didn't.
Yeah, check
he doesn't like
cat.
To leave the house. So.
Yeah, that's weird. It's escaped. All right, Nicole, thank you. We'll get to our closing sanity check in a moment. First, our friends at Valentine Roofing have been awarded the best roofing company in the Pacific Northwest for 3 years in a row. So the real question is, why would you use anyone else? And they do more than just roofing, of course, for this time of year. Attic insulation is very popular because hot air rises. And if your attic isn't properly insulated, then your furnace is just working overtime for no reason at all. So right now, Valentine is offering 10% off when you bundle attic insulation with any new roof. So 10% off, which is great. And then they also have exceptional financing options that are built around your budget, including zero down. And if your gutters got banged up by those recent windstorms we had back in December and you're just now sort of getting your bearings, well, they can help you with that too. So no matter what your home needs, you are guaranteed the Valentine experience, seamless communication, meticulous cleanup, extra mile service, even in winter weather. So lock in your winter bundle savings. Call 206 Roofing today. Again, call 206 Roofing and please tell them that you heard about them right here on Undivided. And with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. Sometimes I just need to take a deep breath, a lot of talking. You know what's true? Our show is the hardest show to do. Harder than all the other shows. You know why? We don't have commercial breaks.
Right. There's well, no, you there's do no, the commercial break.
Well, yeah. There's no, oh, we're going to go to commercial and we'll see you again in 5 minutes.
Right.
And then we can get our bearings and I can breathe. Oh, no, it's straight through.
I agree.
Maybe and we should do pre-taped commercial breaks.
Like I was talking about earlier,
so
I heard Megyn Kelly talking about having 7 producers behind her. Like
Megyn Kelly was
seven?
Like, I only got 7 producers. I'm like, 7? What do you need 7 producers for? Oh, well, Nicole's going to be like, hey, we need 6 more producers. Nope. Sorry. Did I already do our sanity check?
Yeah,
yes, I did. Okay. Trump really just hates windmills. Hates them a lot.
One thing I've noticed is that the more windmills a country has, the more money that country loses and the worse that country is doing. China makes almost all of the windmills, and yet I haven't been able to find any wind farms in China. Did you ever think of that? It's a good way of looking at it. They're smart. China's very smart. They make them. They sell them for a fortune. They sell them to the stupid people that buy them, but they don't use them themselves.
Never before has a human been more obsessed with taking down the windmill industry than President Donald Trump.
He loves birds.
He loves birds. They kill the birds. You know, what do you, they cause cancer, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. He hates windmills. I don't know. What did the windmill do to you, sir? Show me where the windmill touched you. That has been our closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. If you have not signed up to support our show as a paid subscriber, today's the day. Make today the day. Be like, Brandy, you know what? I've been putting it off, freeloading. But you're right. Today is the day. Go to undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com, and you just click on the banner that says support the show for $5. We make it super easy. It takes you right there. You can sign up. And then you can pat yourself on the back saying, I am helping with the downfall of legacy news by supporting independent outlets who tell me the truth. Anyway, I'll see you back here. Same time, same place tomorrow.